Welcome to the Church Planting Group podcast. We are so excited about what God is doing in North America among church planters, partnering churches, and field partners. We invite you to listen to some of North America's best practitioners in the field of church planting. Now get ready, because the conversation is about to begin.
Welcome to the Church Planting Group podcast, hosted by the North American Mission Board. Today's been a great day as we were at the Exponential Church Planting Conference in Orlando, Florida. People I've respected and admired and just been a privilege to even hang out with today are here in our room where we're recording our church planting podcast. We just finished a podcast with Dr. Bill Easom, incredible podcast talking about 10 most common mistakes that church planters make and church starts make. Now we're talking to his partner, Bill Tinney Britton, who, Bill, we actually last year, you pinched hit for Dr. Easom when he wasn't able to come here, and you did the Hitchhiker's Guide to Evangelism. By the way, I got to say something before I welcome you. My wife stole that book from me. I get to borrow it every now and then, but she loved that book, and I thank you so much for letting me read it. It's just been a great, great book, and she, I talked to her last night when we were talking about who was coming. She's like, well, tell him I love that blue and orange book. So I said, I will tell her, tell him that, but thanks so much for being here. We have Bill Tinney Britton here today, and Bill, welcome to the Church Planting Group podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to have a chat again.
Well, it is fun to have you here, and it's fun to have kind of your partner in crime, Bill Easom, here sitting there. If you make a mistake, we'll let Dr. Easom correct it. But I just found out that you guys actually don't even live in the same area, but you do most of this with email and Skype, which is a pretty pretty cool thing. We want to talk about ministry in hard times. And you and Bill have written a book on this. And so share with me about doing ministry for our church planters in the middle. We're in economically hard times. So if you would share with me a little bit about that, would you today, please?
Well, when we talk about ministry in hard times, we don't mean exclusively ministry mm-hmm. in economically tough times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Although that's certainly a part of it. And most church planters that I've been associated with understand the economic hard times, whether the economy is booming or not,
yeah.
because they're always struggling to put together the funds to do what they need to do to do the ministry and to grow the church and to get established. So there's always in some ways some hard times, but we wrote the book based on really the current economic crisis that yeah. we're supposedly yeah. coming out of. That depends on who you're talking to, how out of it you are, but that was the premise. And we find that although the economy may be improving, that it hasn't generally translated into the church as of yet. We're still struggling with trying to recapture the funding that we used to have, mm-hmm. and a lot of people's 401ks went away, and so there's a lot less money in the bank that's available for charitable giving.
Do you think there's one of the things I think about every now and then, is there a little bit of what I call for plants, you know, donor fatigue today?
Well, I don't know that there's so much donor fatigue, although, again, available funds. What mm-hmm. we're finding more and more is that donors are giving money to where they believe is going to do the most good.
Yeah.
And they often look at the church and say, they wouldn't know how to spend this, or I can get more good or see more lives changed if I give it to some other charity.
And isn't that amazing? That is the thought today when you think about the church that, you know, Jesus died for. You
exactly,
know?
Exactly. But I mean, the reality is a lot of these people mm-hmm. have looked at the existing church and they looked at parachurch ministries or mm-hmm. Secular organizations and say, hey, they do a better job with handling my dollars in terms yeah. of life change. And they've been going to church maybe that where there's not a lot of life change going on. And they go, nah, if I'm going to give my money away and I'm, you know, philanthropic, I'm going to give it where I can get the best bang for my buck.
Huge reminder for us as pastors and planters hearing what you just said. Well, we're talking about ministry in hard times, and I know that there's a series of things that you share in the book. Let's just start walking through them, if you would.
Well, I think the bottom line is when you talk about ministry in hard times, we're talking about how do you spend your time in terms of the pastor, the mm-hmm. staff, and the congregation, and how you spend your energy, where do you focus your energy, and finally, of course, how you spend your dollars. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about ministry in hard times, almost everybody wants to talk about the dollars first. But before you can yeah. start talking about the dollars and really be effective with anything, you really have to get to a place where you're not focused on, oh, woe is me. Mm-hmm. Over and over, we go to churches, and they continually remind the parish, the congregation, just how bad things are. You know, times are tough, and yada, yada, yada. And that doesn't inspire a lot of confidence with people.
No,
it doesn't. They don't come to church to dwell on what they already know. And, you know, Jesus Christ came to bring hope to the world and hope to a future. And I was just, you know, thinking about Jeremiah 29:11, that I've come to give you mm-hmm. a future.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're dwelling on current economic crisis, or any current crisis for that matter at all, or the past crises, that you're not hoping. You're just stuck in today. So one of the first things that we say is, Pastor, when you stand up there in the pulpit, let's talk about tomorrow. Let's talk about the ministries that are changing lives today.
Give them hope
and show them hope. So, you know, that really comes down to, again, how is the pastor spending their time? Because the pastor has to be modeling hope, and they have to be demonstrating hope. And if they're going to demonstrate hope, that means they have to be, again, planters, out in the public mm-hmm. forum, touching lives on a personal level and bringing people to faith and helping people's lives transform on a one-on-one relational basis. And then it has to be conspicuous enough that your congregation sees that. In other words, you know, at the you have someone who's walked the aisle, or however you're handling the commitment part during worship services, you introduce the person and say, you know, this is Bob, and, you know, I met Bob at a chamber function, mm-hmm. and we had this conversation over the last 6 months. We've been just talking about spiritual things, and Bob's made a commitment to Jesus Christ, and he's going to be baptized, and so on and so forth. And the whole congregation saw a couple things here.
Oh, yeah.
We saw that the pastor's doing it, because the pastor's saying they're doing it.
What an example that sets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a leadership crisis we keep hearing in our churches, that, you know, leaders, our pastors, you know, aren't leaders, and 6% of mainline pastors say they have the gift of leadership, so that means 94% say they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Church planters generally have a higher percentage, but
what
we hear over and over is that, you know, the churches aren't following our leaders, and what I find actually is we really have incredible leaders in the church, because a lot of leaders aren't doing evangelism, and their congregations are following them, so they're mm-hmm. really good leaders in that. They're
but that's still sad. And coming from the man who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to Evangelism, that's a good point.
You know, and so we have to do it. We have to model it. But mm-hmm. the other thing that you've done when you bring someone up and you share the story is you showed not only that you have fruit, because, you know, pastors rise
people
and fall on
like
credibility.
To see
well,
that.
They want to know they're actually doing it. And if mm-hmm. you just talk about doing it, they'll blow you off. Yeah, mm-hmm. right. That's what every pastor says. Mm-hmm. So you show fruit. That's good. But you're also demonstrating to the congregation how you did it.
Yeah.
I was at the chamber. I had conversations. It took six months.
I went there.
Right,
exactly. Here's my mechanic. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to do strategic dreaming in terms of talking about the future and demonstrating a future that has hope. And, you know, keep that in front of the people about the future, about the vision, instead of, oh, woe is me. You've got to banish woe is me from your conversations and from your preaching.
And young planters, hope is one of your best friends. You know, it is the best friend of a leader. If you are a giver of hope, people will come to a church that is a giver of hope much more than it'll go one it's always down and gloomy and, you know, just all of that. So, you know, great, great point, Bill. Continue on.
Well, the second thing that we write in the book really is the next piece is to return to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a church planter, if you're planting the church and you're still doing as the planting part where you're gathering,
mm-hmm.
this should be a duh and almost should need to be said. But the bottom line is it's about bringing people into the church, bringing people into the faith, bringing people into the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if you will, handing them off to others for discipleship, because, Pastor, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Everything, I mean.
Yeah.
And so that's not what I meant, although it may be Freudian. You know, the bottom line is we have to continue to come back to the basics, which is focusing on hospitality issues,
mm-hmm.
making sure that people feel welcome. You know, that people decide within the first, depends on who you read, 2 minutes to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
They made a decision whether they're returning. So if your hospitality is not where it needs to be, if you haven't read the book, Jim and Casper Go to Church.
Mm-hmm.
Casper was an atheist, and Jim's a Christian guy who took him to all these churches. And one of the things Casper says is, please, just walk across the room and say hi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just have a conversation with your guests. Well, we have to remember that everyone in the church, all who were princes and princesses of the king, are hosts.
Yep.
You're not guests. And the guests are the ones who are not yet princes and princesses.
Oh, that is so
and
important.
And so everybody has to be the host. And so, you know, back to the basics. You're bringing people in, and you're helping people feel welcome and connected.
Well, so, I thought about, John Maxwell told me years ago when I was a young planner, he said, people will decide way before you ever open your mouth on that sermon whether or not they are connected to that church.
Unless your sermon is the first thing you do, and I don't know any sermon.
I don't know many of those.
Yeah, I don't know either. They always start. Yeah. It's already decided before you open your mouth whether they're coming back.
Yes, that is.
And so, you just have to remember that it's about the welcome mm-hmm. and whether they feel at home, whether they feel comfortable, whether they feel like there's hope here.
A connection.
And a connection, exactly. And I'll jump to the last chapter. One of the key is if there's any sort of conflict going on, an unresolved conflict. I'm not talking about, we're talking about, I think we ought to have chocolate. No, strawberry's better.
Yeah.
I'm talking about unresolved conflict. They know it. Oh, yeah. Man. Okay, you're not coming to my church. Anyway, you have to have the conflict. You got to have what I call a conflict-free zone
mm-hmm.
where really love and grace abounds. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything besides love and grace abounding, then it's really hard to get visitors. In fact, my wife is fond of saying, why would you even invite someone to church in an environment like that?
Yeah.
So, if you've got conflict planter, deal with it, which is,
sooner than later.
Oh, right now. My pastor says, deal with it while it's a speck on the horizon before it's a brick in the head.
And why is it that a lot of church planters think if they just ignore it, it'll go away? And it doesn't go away. It just festers.
Well, I don't think that they think if they ignore it, that's their rationale. Because every pastor that I know hates to deal. I've never come with a pastor who says, man, I love dealing with conflict.
It's just the way we're wired.
Right. We don't want to do it. We don't want to be the bad guy or the good guy mm-hmm. or anything else that gets in the middle of this. Because we know if we step into a fight, we might get hit.
Yeah.
And we want to be the nice guy or the nice gal. We want to be the nice person and do the nice stuff. And if we step into it and have to deal with conflict, mm-hmm. we stop being nice. And nice is not a Christian value.
Yeah.
Jesus was not a nice guy. Now, he wasn't mean, but he was kind. But sometimes kindness means tough love. Mm-hmm. He let the rich young ruler walk away. He did not chase him down, say, wait, let's talk about this. He said, here's the line. This is how we do things. And he walked away. And Jesus, just go, okay, whatever. So, we have to step in. We have to deal with the conflict. We want to create an incubator of faith, a place where people can come in and see models of Christians mm-hmm. because there's precious few out there who are role models, and people go, man, I'd like to trade lives with that person because that person really, their spiritual life is right where I need it to be. And we need to have those models in our congregation. So,
yes, we do.
Like I said, I dropped to the last
chapter.
That's
all right, man. We don't have to be linear.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so the next big piece then is really about, everyone wants to know about money.
Yeah.
What do we do about money?
And the hard decisions that come around that.
That's right, exactly. And so, in hard times, you have to decide how to spend your money.
How to survive.
Well, and I would say that if we have a survival mindset, then we're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
A survival mindset.
Unpack that a little bit more.
Okay, sure. Well,
in hard times, how do you make sure you don't close the doors in hard times? Is what I was asking.
When you focus on not closing the doors,
you close the doors.
Yeah, you've closed the doors because mm-hmm. it's all about us.
Yeah,
it's all about us surviving and us, doing
great
whatever.
Point.
And we put our face into the budgets. We put our face into all the things that will not grow a church.
Bear me, Lord.
Survival is the first thing that's got to be thrown out of the church planting mm-hmm. or established church boat. It's got to go out. You start worrying about survival, then if Jesus had worried about survival, there'd have been no cross.
Mm-hmm.
He could have left town and it'd been fine. But that's
fourth
not
time.
Well,
yeah.
Easily could have escaped if he'd wanted to. Okay, I mean, one way or the other, he didn't have to do the cross, and so it wasn't about survival. It was about doing what needs to get done. And, we have to decide. It really isn't. It's not about how much money we have or how much money we're taking in. It's how we spend the money that we have available. And when we spend the money that we have available in an appropriate way, then we can make great inroads in doing the ministry of Jesus Christ. But it's when we spend money inappropriately or allocate it in the wrong areas that it makes us stumble. It keeps us from growing forward. So
blow up in our faces.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So real quick, here's a couple of things you always cut in hard times. Okay. Now the first.
And these are not easy decisions, are they?
Oh no. No, mm-hmm. no one wants to cut anything.
Yeah.
Because when you cut something, you're stepping on somebody's toes. Because mm-hmm. there are people who, that's my favorite program.
Yeah.
Or We have to have that. We've always had that. We've been at church plant for 6 months, and it's tradition already.
Yeah.
You have to have it. So,
you're right. Six months, and it is tradition.
Now, those of you who are in judicatory, I want you to sit down and maybe put your hands over your ears and go, la, 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 la.
And as a Southern Baptist, we'll just say denominational work. Go ahead.
That's right. Exactly. Thank you. Okay. It's the first thing that you cut is missions. Missions giving.
Now, I'm sure there are those who, whether they're in your denomination or in mine, that's a shocker. But unpack that. Why are you saying that?
Well, the reality is that if you continue to give to missions, which is outside of yourself, and you give it all away, you won't survive.
Well, that's what I was asking you before.
But So if you don't exist in a year. If you don't exist in 3 years because you've given it all away, and I know churches that are committed to giving 10% to missions, mm-hmm. and I'm watching them shrivel up and die. But when they die, they have nothing to give. And so you're better off pulling that money for now, investing in into the growth principles of your congregation, mm-hmm. things that will actually help you grow so that you can begin giving again. And if you do it right, you'll be giving even more. Because you will no longer be in survival mode, you will be in thriving mode, and there will be money there to give away. Mm-hmm. But you have to allocate in hard times, in tough times, when you have to make these tough decisions, missions is one of the places you have to cut.
And if I heard you right, in the tough time, you didn't say cut it forever. You said when you can get back on it again, get back on it.
It's a must.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not, I believe.
I mean, we're a mission people of the scripture. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And I personally believe if a church isn't tithing, what are you teaching your church?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you tithe in some way to your denominational leaders and to other missions that you're working with.
So probably all denominational people are breathing again. Let's continue
on. Right, okay. The next, well, here we're going to have the same heart attack in a moment.
Bill.
The next piece you cut is youth.
Yeah.
You know, and
you would cut a youth minister or a youth group? Gosh.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were a godly man.
Well, the problem with funding youth is, mm-hmm. And people don't want to hear this, but youth is a welfare program. And now I don't mean that totally in the negative sense that we normally think of welfare, but what I mean by that is youth is a program in which it takes time, effort, and energy that you have to give out, and the reality is you don't get much back. Mm-hmm. Because at best, you're preparing people for someone else's church.
Yeah.
Very rarely do they stay home. You know, some rural settings maybe. And even there, I mean, they're gone unless they're a part of the farm.
A long, long time since I've been to my growing up church.
Right, exactly. And on top of that, you know, one of the keys we have to remember is youth don't grow churches.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a great youth program, and I'm not saying you don't have to have a youth program, I'm saying funding.
I'm not
for,
hearing that.
Right,
know, anyway.
But if you have a really great youth program and you're counting on that to grow your church, what 13-year-old or 16-year-old wants to bring their parents to the church they've just found? They don't want the parents there.
Not
right, exactly. So that's one of the areas you cut. And often, as Bill had said in the podcast earlier, Bill Eason said mm-hmm. in the podcast earlier, is that these programs, these youth programs, they suck you dry, and there's a lot of money, and they're the first hire you've made, and that's the wrong first hire for
and
a church plant.
And just to remind our listeners, if they hadn't heard Bill's, you know, he said, you know, hiring a youth minister is not the first hire. Really, a good, strong worship leader, whatever you want to call that
right,
person,
exactly.
is much better for the planner strategy.
Right. And the other place you need to cut is, like, you know, office staff, mm-hmm. you know, do it by volunteers.
Well, at my church, we just downsized from a pretty, you know, I mean, we're facing some economical challenges, and we had to downsize our support staff and all that, and we hope one day we'll get to change that, but it is what it is.
Right, exactly, yeah. And you have to cut somewhere. That's, you know, those are places that you can normally. Now, pastor, you don't take it on.
Now, here, let me also say this. It's better for a pastor leader to address these issues with his leadership that helps him with this than to stand before the church 9 months later and say, you know, we're $250,000 down because I was afraid to pull the trigger.
Right, exactly. If you're going to be a church planter, you had better be a leader.
Yes.
And leaders make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't make decisions, probably church planting's not where you need to be.
It's not your game.
Right, exactly. Then you cut custodial staff and all that kind of stuff. The last one that you have to cut that you really have, this one's painful, again, is cutting non-essential ministries. Very often we start ministries and we can't stop them, even though they're ineffective,
yeah.
even though they're not directly involved in bringing people in or assimilating them. And those are the two things you have to have. You have to have things that bring people in and then connect them immediately, quickly. You have a limited time.
Yeah.
So if it's not doing those two things, you have to stop doing it. You have to stop throwing money at it.
And ultimately, probably with the strategy of the church, they need to stop.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, and I would say that's generally true of all churches, that if it's not, if it's not furthering your mission, knock it off. You're not helping anything.
Yeah, no.
You're just dragging yourself down. All right, now, let's go to the other side. Where do you spend that money that you've just saved? You know, the first thing that, that we tell people is there's only two, if you will, programs that grow a church. And that's a dynamic worship service that is reaching your target audience. And in most church planters, I don't have to argue about a target audience or not. So whoever you're trying to reach, whoever you're most likely to reach, you throw money at that, and you throw money at children's programming. Because children's program, you know, children can't go to church alone. And if they have a dynamite time, if they think it's the best thing since Cheerios, I guess, or Captain Crunch, they will drag mommy and daddy back to church.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the, if you're going to hire someone, if you can't convince your church to hire a worship pastor, then get your church to hire someone who can do children's programming better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's where you throw your money. Evangelism and marketing. You know, there's where you, whatever it takes to do evangelism, and that can be not a inexpensive, and it but it doesn't have to be expensive if you
can
get everyone doing it.
Either
right,
or. Yeah.
Exactly. And then marketing, whatever marketing works in your area, and I think it's beyond the scope of this program to talk about that. You can go forever
another
on it.
Time, yeah.
Right. And then, you know, you ought to, at this point, you need to continue to pay continuing ed, not just for the pastor, but also for your key leaders. Where are they getting the education? Why are they not here at Exponential, you know, et cetera? These people need to be continually taught the newest, the best, and continually seeing the dream and seeing what others are doing and how they can adapt and adopt. Servant ministries, you know, doing the stuff that Shrogan does, and et cetera. And then small groups and spiritual formation. You know, those that has to go on. You point out we're almost out of time. Let me just one last thing that's really key here is how do you overcome, in a lot of churches, you need to overcome your organizational beast. Your organizational beast is all those darn committees and all those meetings and all that stuff you're doing.
That sucks up our time.
That sucks up our time.
Okay.
And we need to have not only the pastor out in the field, but our lay people have to be out in the field. And so if they're sucked up, as you say, with meetings. So one of the recommendations we make, and people really push back on this, but it's really
true,
is stop doing any meetings for 1 year during hard times. Don't do any meetings. And what you'll find out is your church will continue to pay its bills. Your church will continue to worship. And at the end of the year, then you can pick out what committees you need to have, but the reality is most churches need almost no committees to function effectively because people will raise up their own teams to get the work done. And so stop doing meetings. So that's, I mean, that would be, there's doing ministry in hard times.
That's incredible. And, you know, knowing the year in which we're all living and we're talking about here, we've seen that. And, you know, there's some hard decisions. I get planters calling me all the time. I experience that in my local church that, you know, hopefully one day very soon we'll overcome some of these challenges and we'll be able to do some of the things. But, you know, we've seen it in our staff. We've seen it, you know, you're right on some of the stuff, even though it is painful. You know, for us to deal with.
Leadership is not easy. If you thought it, if you think suddenly that leadership is easy, again, you're in the wrong job. And leading a church is one of the most difficult leadership positions of all. But
totally
if you
agree.
Won't make decisions, if you can't make decisions, and if you can't make the tough decisions, you will not be able to lead your church into a hope-filled and thriving tomorrow.
Amen. Well, I've been blessed in our time together with both of you. And Bill, thanks so much for being part of the podcast. You've been a blessing.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, friends, be sure to come back next week because you never know what God may be up to and have in store to teach you and lead you in the area of your church plan. And as always, remember to visit thechurchplantingvillage.net for all of your church planning resource needs. Planting the seed of God's love in North America and beyond, this is your Church Planting Group podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of the Church Planning Group podcast. By subscribing to this podcast, you've already taken some great steps to being trained and equipped for God's work of church planting. Also, be sure to check out churchplantingvillage.net for more resources and information on church planting, partnering churches, and field partners, plus the latest edition of the Church Planning Group podcast. Reaching America, Canada, and beyond, this is your Church Planning Group podcast.